This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Beyond Natural Pet Food. Beyond Pet Food helps me care for what matters, my pets and my world. They help me nourish my pets with high-quality natural ingredients like wild-caught salmon and organic free-range chicken. Beyond also has responsible sourcing practices and a long-term partnership with the Nature Conservancy. Beyond Pet Food, your pet, your world. Learn more at beyondpetfood.com.
Turn up your volume. Your volume. Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast. The Sick Podcast. With Tony Marinaro.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
There is a bomb!
Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoint, on lui fait perdre la rondelle une passe devant. Et c'est bon, ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Année pour les Canadiens, le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters on the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaBee.TV. It's gonna be sick.
Marinaro, the Sick Podcast on this Monday, May 15. It is a couple of minutes past 10 o'clock and game seven going on between the Dallas Stars and the Seattle Kraken. As I get all kinds of notifications, actually, that we are live right now as we speak. So thank you very much for that to my smartphone. It's time for Do Not Disturb mode. Yeah. And the Dallas Stars lead on a goal by Rupe Hintz. With 16 minutes to go in, what's wrong with my microphone tonight? All right, okay, there we go. I think we got it figured out. With less than 16 minutes to go in regulation, the Stars with the only goal of the hockey game, and let's hope that not too many other goals are scored, and this one stays under the total of six, if you know what I mean. All right, okay. I think I just cursed myself. But anyway, we'll see what happens here. Okay, we have a lot to talk about, and Eric Engels is going to join us and join us shortly. He is a regular collaborator on Mondays on the Sick Podcast. And, you know, I see that he's somewhere close by here, and he should be joining us in just a second. Of course, the Sick Podcast is brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group, a leading full-service logistics provider serving all of North America. They are driven to be different. Also, brewed in Quebec and a winner of a dozen international awards, La Bite TB offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. La Bite TB, embrace your true nature. And also brought to you in part by Excel Moto, who carry most motorcycle and scooter brands on the market, which, of course, includes the Piaggio Group, which is Aprilia, Piaggio, and Vespa. They have a vast inventory of parts and accessories, and their technicians and service advisors are all highly trained. Excel Moto, your ultimate destination and best customer service experience, in my opinion, your only place to buy a Vespa in the city. So check them out at excelmoto.com and take down this number. Give Ali or Vito a call at 514-738-6686. And they have a promotion that you'll they'll give you a helmet of a certain value if you buy your scooter before the end of June. All right, okay. It looks like we have our guy. Without further ado, let's bring him in right now. He is of Sportsnet at sportsnet.ca. Eric Engels, what's going on?
What's happening? Everything good?
Everything's great. A little bit of a darker look than usual. And I have to say, I like it. What are we doing here?
I just wanted to turn those lights off behind me because otherwise it would create a bit of a weird flash.
Yeah, no, no. It looks good like this. I like it. It looks very, very good. With one eye, I would imagine, on the game between Dallas and Seattle.
Yeah, half on. I got to tilt.
Oh, you have to tilt. Yeah. I set the TV up so that it's, I just have to probably, you know, not even on a 45 degree angle, just a little bit. One eye on the right. I can take a look at that anyway. So I'll keep you posted what's going on. All right.
Okay, good.
What's been going on with you?
Not a whole lot. Like, everything's been pretty good. I covered the Carolina New Jersey series a bit for Sportsnet. Yeah. And then when that got done, take a little break.
Yeah.
Charge the batteries, but always got time for you.
All right. Okay. So Carolina, Florida, uh-huh. Vegas, and their opponent's going to be the winner of Dallas and Seattle. I know that if memory serves me well, you were calling for Dallas to go very far, probably make it to the final. I think anyway, but who's your Stanley Cup favorite right now? Is it Carolina?
Yeah, I got Carolina winning the Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they just drag you into the mud to play against them. And I don't know if there's any team that's willing to play the way it would take to beat them. Like, maybe Dallas might be the only one, honestly. They're a gritty, physical, tough team, and they've got some youth injection there. And one thing about Dallas, like, Jamie Benn has 2 goals in the playoffs and Jason Robertson has 2 goals in the playoffs. And, like, it might be enough to get them through Seattle as they're up a goal, right?
Yeah.
But it's not going to be enough to get them through the next 2 rounds. So that's got to change if they're going to keep going. Carolina is just a wagon. They're yeah. just so hard to play against. They're so fast. They're so in your face. And they play the game in such a demanding physical way that there's very few teams that can hang with them. And then, you know, New Jersey finished 1 point ahead of them and 1 point behind them in the standings this year. Like, the gap between them was Grand Canyon level large in yeah. that series.
Yeah.
It really wasn't close.
No, it wasn't. You're right about that. It was once they decided to put it in fifth gear, I mean, New Jersey just couldn't catch up.
Yeah, it just felt like the one game that New Jersey won, they played the way you have to play to beat Carolina, which is you got to be willing to dump pucks out of your zone as soon as they get in there because that forecheck is unbeatable. When you have a 5-man forecheck coming at you, you're not going to pass your way through that. So if you flip pucks into the neutral zone and dump them out, you create races and you create odd man rushes. And New Jersey was the best odd man rush team in the NHL this year. And for the first 2 games, they tried to do it the way they normally do, which is great elite passing skill kind of plays. And they got their asses handed to them. And then game 3 came, and then, you know what? They changed the tactics and all of a sudden got those chances that they thrive on and end up winning the game big, 8-4. And they were able to sustain it for like 10 more minutes, and then they looked exhausted and it was over. I mean, that's what Carolina does to you. They grind you into the ground. And they did it to New Jersey and made it look like this was men against boys. And that team, watch out for the New Jersey Devils in the next few years, because if they add a couple of tough, big, heavy type style players that can really play, you know, trying to think of like the style of player I'm talking about, if I could come up with a prototypical guy that they could use, not quite like Ryan Reeves, like not necessarily like a tough guy. But
Marcus Foligno.
Yeah, a little faster than that. Like,
yeah,
honestly, like Achari for Toronto. If they get 3 of those guys that are gritty, physical, tough, hard to play against, in your face type players, there wouldn't be much to stop them. You know, they've got all the ingredients to be a really great team for years.
Yeah, and some of those key ingredients, of course, is depth down the middle, which is extremely important. I mean, unfortunately, it didn't work out for Toronto, but if you take a look at teams that have won the Cup in the last 15 years, there's been a lot of depth down the middle, and the New Jersey Devils with 2 first picks overall, Nico Hischier is one of their centers, and Jack Hughes is another, and I believe the 2 other centers that they have are former first-round picks, if memory serves me well, and Michael McLeod and Curtis Lessard, obviously first-round picks and not first pick overall, but, you know, they're pretty deep down the middle. They're pretty deep down the middle.
I don't know if Lazar is there, but yes, Michael McLeod is a really good player, improved it. You can play on their 4th line. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, it's tough to focus on them when we see the way Carolina's played. And Carolina without Teravainen, which it looks like they're going to get him back, but without Svechnikov and Pacioretty. And like five different goal scorers every night. I mean, they're just – and Frederik Andersen. I mean, for a guy who built up a reputation as being a really great regular season goaltender who is potentially a little fragile and could get injured easily or can't deliver in the playoffs, he's been awesome so far. And he came in late, you know, with Ranta holding them up in the first round. They haven't needed incredible goaltending.
Yeah.
You know, like if you look at Edmonton and the way they play the game, they didn't just need good goaltending. They needed incredible goaltending because they can't lock down a game 2-1 to save their lives. It's funny. I've been saying this all year. I was on your podcast and very outspoken about it earlier in the year. I said this team will never, ever win the way they're constructed. And then they went and got Matthias Ekholm, and I was kind of like, oh, okay, like that is a move that could actually change things for them. And I was thinking as I was watching these playoffs, like this might be the one year where they could get away without winning a game like 2-1. But I was saying all year that this team can't win a game 2-1. And I was wondering if I was right. So I went and looked at the stats. And through the entire preseason and the regular season and the playoffs, they won three games this year by a score of 2-1. And a lot of people will say, okay, this doesn't matter that much. It does, though, because you could get through three teams in the Stanley Cup playoffs scoring the way they were scoring, and like the fact that they could put up five goals a night is incredible, and they could win by wide gaps because of McDavid and because of Draisaitl and because of a power play that was virtually unstoppable. But at even strength, they got crushed by Vegas by double, and the goals were 18-9. And you can make it through three teams, you know, but like you run into one like Carolina, if you can't win a game 2-1, you're not winning the Stanley Cup. And they didn't even get it out of round two. So, I mean, it's just such a disappointing thing.
Yeah.
I don't blame Ken Holland. Like he's had his hands completely tied since he's been there. That I don't think there's one team in the NHL that was more affected by the cap flattening over the last three seasons.
Yeah.
Than that team.
So here we are, May 15th. We're still talking about Cole Caulfield, who the Canadians would have loved to have signed before their last regular season game or to announce it when their season ended on Thursday, April the 13th. So just over a month later, still unsigned. And Darren Dreger says, I look at Tim Stützle's contract, and it's probably the kind of deal that Pat Brisson would like to have for Cole Caulfield. An 8-year deal at $8.35 million a year. If you take a look at what Stützle put up in year one, 29 points in 53 games. And then after that, in year two, 58 points in 79 games. And it should be noted that Cole Caulfield put up 26 goals and 36 points in 46 games. You hear that from Darren Dreger regarding the contract and comparables. You think what exactly?
When migraine strikes, you're faced with a choice. Ride it out with the trade-offs of treating or push through the pain and symptoms. With Ubrelvy or Ubrogepant, there's another option. Ubrelvy is a prescription medicine used to treat migraine attacks in adults and is not for prevention. One dose works fast to eliminate migraine pain. Most people had pain relief, and some even had pain freedom within 2 hours. Treat it anytime, anywhere, without worrying where you are or if it's too late. People took Ubrelvy within 4 hours of a migraine attack.
Do not take with strong CYP3A4 inhibitors or if allergic to Ubrelvy. Allergic reactions can happen and may occur hours to days after use. Get medical help right away if you have swelling of the face, mouth, tongue, or throat, or trouble breathing. The most common side effects were nausea and sleepiness.
Ask your doctor about Ubrelvy, the anytime, anywhere migraine medicine. Find more product information at Ubrelvy.com or call 844-4-U-B-R-E-L-V-Y. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Not a whole lot. I don't think that number is on the table for Cole right now. I do believe that a 7 or 8 year deal is on the table for him. You know, I think the Canadians would like to sign him long term. I think that he and his camp would like to sign long term. You know, I don't think they've gone nuclear and gone into that short term offer that I've talked about quite a bit that if I were in his shoes, I would angle for, unless the 8-year or 7-year deal is up in that Stützle range. So it would make sense, you know, like it would make sense if he wants to get locked in for 8 years, being the goal scorer that he is. Somebody I spoke to said something interesting to me about goal scorers, and that they are in one of the least guaranteed kind of secure positions in terms of their ability to replicate that success, right?
Okay.
Like, it's unpredictable that, you know, a goal scorer, even if he's been one for his entire career and his life leading up to it, that year over year he'll do as well or have as much opportunity and score as well. And like even Austin Matthews, who had what, 65 goals a year ago and more in the 40 range this year.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's the hardest thing to do in the game. I think, you know, if you're in that type of position and someone offers you a 7-8 year deal, you know, I think if both sides want to work towards that, they'll find common ground. I do believe, you know, I've spoken to people, and obviously the people who are running this negotiation are not leaking out about it. They're not talking to anybody.
No.
They don't want it, the waters to get sullied in any type of way. But I've spoken to people, I've sniffed around, and I've made calls to the people who are involved in the deal. You know, they're pretty quiet about it. But I do believe that the Canadians have a long-term offer on the table for Cole Caulfield. And if the money were exactly what he wanted it to be, his, you know, name would already be on the paper or signed.
Of course.
So let's see where it goes. But like,
well, I got off the phone a couple of days ago, and I was told they're just not on the same page right now. And, you know, neither side is in a happy place. And basically,
I don't think either side is unhappy
that's negotiations, right? That's,
I don't think anybody's unhappy. I gotta be honest, but I will say, I think we should not be framing this as some sort of urgent matter. There is literally no urgency here.
There's not. I mean, Cole Caulfield's going to play for the Montreal Canadiens next year, and this is negotiations. This is what
I don't even think July 1st and offer sheet territory is even a threat. I don't even think that's a thing that's involved in here. I don't think it's a pressure point type of date for the Canadiens. You know, I don't, beginning of training camp, whatever. If we get to halfway through training camp and a deal isn't done.
What a goal Dallas just scored. Wow.
Something will be wrong. It looks like Wyatt Johnson.
Wow. A backhand that you just wouldn't think that he was going to be able to roof it. And he did. And Grubauer is looking at the Jumbotron saying, how in the world did that go in? Let me take a look at that. Grubauer, who, by the way, has been outstanding up until this point.
Seen in this game.
But there's a basically, wow, just roofed it over his shoulder. He caught Grubauer going down, and he was able to hit it off of his shoulder and hit off his mask. But that's a smart play. Sees Grubauer commit early and says, you know what, let me try and put it up there. There's a little opening, and he was able to get it up there off the shoulder, off the mask, and in.
It was Wyatt Johnson, right?
Yeah, it was Wyatt Johnston. Yeah,
he's really skilled and is going to be a really good player.
Dallas is up 2-0 with 7 minutes to go in regulation. And all we got to do now is hope that 4 more goals will not be scored in this hockey game so that...
you hit the under?
Of course I did.
Seventh
game. I mean, I thought it was a gimme because the last couple of games have been high scoring, so I understand the line. But I knew that Seattle was going to say, hey, if we want to win this game in Dallas, a game 7, we have to keep it as a low scoring game. But it is a low scoring game, and they're on the opposite end of it, unfortunately. But at the same time, let's hope that we don't see 4 goals. All right.
I don't think anybody should worry about Caulfield not getting done, you know, right away. I'm sure everybody would love to hear an announcement. I'm sure the Canadians would love to make one tomorrow. I'm sure Caulfield would love to have the whole thing done in his back pocket and he can get back to or continue on with his shoulder rehabilitation, get on the golf course and all that. There's just
Eric, we have 2 people involved right now who are pretty awesome at contract negotiation. One being agent Pat Briseau and one being Montreal Canadiens general manager, former NHL player agent Kent Hughes. I mean, could you imagine, like, you know, the line is that everyone wants to win here, but at the same time, I mean, you know, the team wants to win, the agent wants to win, the player wants to win, but that's two pretty sharp dudes trying to pen to paper and all that stuff.
They'll find their way. They'll find their way. And they, look, I just think I get everybody being impatient about this type of thing, like everyone outside of it. It's just, you know, these things, when it comes down to heavy negotiations, like, you know, when you get into like the real details, they tend to get settled when there's an actual deadline to get them settled. You know, like it's, there's nothing, as far as I'm concerned, as far as I've been told, there's nothing contentious about this negotiation right now.
I hear you.
Nobody's unhappy.
Yeah. No, I'm just going to take the next 5 minutes off to actually look up contentious and see what it means. And then we can pick up where we left off.
There's no fighting. There's no fighting.
I know. I understand. Okay. I want to get to Sean Farrell at the Worlds. Goal assisted by Lane Hudson. That's good.
I guess so.
Well, yeah. Well, you know, those are two guys that that have put up numbers in the past season, and two guys that Montreal Canadiens fans are looking at saying, hey, you know what? I want to see these guys going forward in a Montreal Canadiens uniform, and they're both in on it. So did the future play itself out today at the Worlds? Maybe, just maybe.
Maybe. They're also two guys that, like, you can afford to give some time to develop, and, like, people should not be freaking out if for whatever reason they're not killing it in the NHL. You know, well, obviously Hudson's going to be next year. Farrell put up really good numbers at the Worlds a year ago, and numbers at the Olympics, and has played against men in that competition. I think the experience that Farrell gained towards the end of the season and the value, obviously any pick, any player coming in from college wants to be able to burn a year and get closer to starting their NHL career and get that experience right away. And for the team, you could say, okay, you know, like, we're incentivizing them to ensure that they're signing with us. It's great, though. It is an accelerant from a development standpoint. If you can get that experience, if you just, no matter how it goes, find out how that league works going into a summer worth of training and seeing what the speed is, engaging and feeling it. You know, you could watch it your whole life, or you could watch it from up top. You'll never know until you step on the ice and actually experiencing it.
Yeah.
Especially towards the end of the year against some teams that were getting ready for the playoffs and that. Like, he was playing in some pretty difficult situations to start in the NHL, and I think some of the reaction was like, I don't know about this kid. It's like, okay, like, give him a few games, get it under his belt. You know, I don't know where he starts next year. He'll have a task in front of him to make the team. If he ends up in Laval to start for 20 games, 30 games, or an entire season, there's really, you know, it's not like the clock is ticking on him, and he's going to be a good player. If you speak to Adam Nicklaus, he thinks he's going to be a fantastic player. Lane Hudson, I don't know what else, you know, like, we're going to have one of those conversations 5 years from now where we're redrafting the 2022 draft, and I really wonder where people are going to put Lane Hudson on that list. You know, like, he was a second rounder. And he was a lot smaller when he was drafted than he is today. And he had produced a lot less than he did over an incredible first season in the NCAA. And all of a sudden now he's at the World Championships. You know, it was a crazy year from a talent evaluation standpoint, right? Like, 2 years of the pandemic, these kids probably the most affected of any draft class.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like 3 to 5 years from now when we're redrafting the 2022 draft.
Yeah.
There won't be much of a question that Lane Hudson would have gone in the first round.
Yeah.
The real question will be is how far up the list he actually gets.
Let's talk about a former Montreal Canadian, if we can. Patrick Roy, who your buddy and colleague, Elliot Freeman of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca, and his own podcast is 32 Thoughts, and giving it a plug here on this podcast. Look at that. You know, we're all we're into, we want everyone to do well. You know, we want everyone to do
well. You're the guy from Sportsnet, and I love those guys. Jeff and Elliot are phenomenal.
Yeah.
Standard bearers, in my opinion.
Yes. And saying that, you know, Patrick Roy's name has come up in Columbus. Could you see Patrick Roy being the coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets?
I could see it happening if he doesn't end up as the coach of the New York Rangers.
I would love to see him on Broadway. And I've always said, Patrick, to New York, thanks, but no thanks. You know, I talked to Michelle Therrien about this today, and I said, Michelle, Patrick, and he said, you know, Tony, geez, man, he certainly paid his dues. I mean, I hope for him, and he really has. You know, I know he was a head coach in the National Hockey League for three seasons, but I mean, you know, he came back now to coach in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League for the last eight seasons and accomplished pretty much everything you need to accomplish at that level, whether it's in league or Memorial Cup. And, you know, Patrick Roy would just make so much sense with the New York Rangers, right? Some veterans who unfortunately didn't work overly hard in the playoffs, who need someone who commands respect. You think definitely Patrick would. So many memories for Patrick at MSG in that arena. And MSG is used to big names and big stars, right? And Patrick Roy would certainly be one of them.
Yeah, I mean, he'd be right up there with the best of them. And also, I mean, there's a relationship with Chris Drury, obviously. The two were champions together.
Yes.
Patrick is a fiery competitor. That's the top thing you would say about Patrick Roy, whether you knew him or didn't, or just knew of his career. He's a winner. He's also a winner. I think of those three words, fiery, competitor, winner. When I think of Patrick Roy, those are the first words that come to mind.
Yeah.
Everything else that comes with that package, if you're smart, you learn to live with, because winning is what counts. And the Rangers have certainly positioned themselves to be a team that can win moving forward. Talked about New Jersey earlier, talked about Carolina. You know, the Rangers, with a lot of help from Jeff Gordon and now under Chris Drury, have a lot of the pieces you would like to see in a team that could win. I think Igor Shesterkin will bounce back pretty hard. I think some players underperform that are very young that have the ability to take on much more responsibility on the team moving forward and fill the voids that will likely be left by Tarasenko and Kane.
Yeah.
And why not put a guy in there who is a winner? I think – I don't know – for sure, if they're looking at Patrick Roy, I don't know for sure if he's interested in that position, but I could see a real strong fit there. And if Columbus is in the mix and all of a sudden there's a couple teams that are interested in Patrick Roy, the chances of him returning to the NHL are high. I would say that New York is a better fit because of Drury. You know, one of the reasons why Patrick, I think, ended up on the outs in Colorado.
Yeah.
Is, you know, he had certain assurances from the
power struggle with him and Joe Sakic.
Yeah, but I think that's been overblown. I've had some conversations. Like, I think it's more that he was told that he would at least be consulted on certain decisions, and then all of a sudden that didn't happen. And so it's, you know, some sort of trust was broken there.
Well, it didn't happen because Joe didn't want.
I mean, I don't know that Patrick himself wanted, you know, omnipotence. He wanted to be the most powerful guy and have say on every single thing that happens. I think he just wanted to be involved in the discussion as the head coach of the team. And I think at some point or another, there was a disconnect and he had enough of it and left. He's probably learned from that experience too. So I see a better fit with New York because Drury's there and it is a guy he knows. We'll see what happens with Columbus if they are in fact interested. I think whoever gets him is getting a winner, and you take whatever else comes with that package.
Yeah, you would think that Drury would probably pick up the phone, give Joe Sakic a call, who was their former teammate as well, and say, "Hey, Joe, Patrick Roy has caught our attention as we're looking for a coach. Talk to me about your working relationship with him, and what do you think?" I mean, and You would think
but at the same time, if Chris Drury believed that that relationship was tainted and had an understanding of why it was tainted, he may not look for an opinion that might be somewhat biased against Patrick Roy. He might
just I hear you.
Himself. I already know, kind of. I have to take this information with a grain of salt. I mean, at the end of the day, if you buy a car, you don't want to just hear what somebody else has to say about that car. You want to go see the car and test drive the car. You know, I think ultimately these decisions, you can go with I think references are important only to a certain extent, in that they're kind of your fail safe. I'm going to hire this person. Let me just call one or two people as I'm getting closer to putting the pen on paper to make sure that I'm not making a huge mistake. You know, I think if you're making your decisions based on what people tell you about someone before you meet with that person and really get a sense for what their vision is and where they're going with it, that's probably not the way you want to hire a head coach in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, I hear you.
And Patrick, he's Patrick Roy. He's not he's not somebody who's been coaching. I was about to say a bantam hockey team, but no offense to Martin.
Well, you know what? Rob Brindamore, I saw this in The Athletic. Rob Brindamore says that coaching kids and coaching adults, coaching NHLers, is not much difference. He says coaching is coaching.
Are there two coaches more alike? Are there two coaches more alike than Marty St. Louis and Rob Brindamore in the NHL?
When I saw Marty St. Louis at the beginning, I mean, the comparable for me was this guy could turn into Rod Brindamore. And if he does, and I'm confident that he will, be that kind of coach. I think he is already, Brindamore obviously, with a lot more experience here. But then the Canadians, you know, they found themselves a real good hockey coach. And I believe that Marty St. Louis will have the Canadians playing the same kind of hockey that the Carolina Hurricanes are playing under Rod Brindamore within a couple of years. I mean, I already see it. And this with a depleted lineup, this with a decimated lineup, this with not quite the same lineup, not the same talent. And so it's pretty cool to read that article. By the way, 27.7 seconds left in regulation. Dallas is up by a score of 2-0. And now 21.9 seconds. And there's Seattle has a faceoff in the offensive zone. So this one here is all but over. And Eric, this is what you've been stressing when you've been talking about the Edmonton Orders.
Seattle just scored.
At one point, they just scored.
Wow.
This is my worst nightmare because Jean-Charles had Seattle plus 1.5. Yeah, this is my worst nightmare because so he's going to be able to cover here. Wow. All right, so we'll see what happens.
There's still a chance of the...
There's still a chance here.
Empty net goal for Dallas.
Hey, you know, tell me you wouldn't want a overtime here at this point. Game seven, overtime.
How much time is left here? Is there 2 minutes?
17.6.
17.6 seconds?
Yeah.
Yanni Gourde. Glasses, man.
Yeah, Yanni Gourde assist. 17.6 seconds left
in regulation. I think Dallas will wrap this thing up.
Yeah. Well, you would think. I mean, that's what the probabilities say, but we'll see what happens.
They've got a lot of good veterans on this team, but they're a little younger than people realize. Like, they're really driven by some good young players.
4 goals this postseason for Oliver Bjorkstrom. He's had a good playoff, eh? Had a good playoff.
He has a gun of a shot. Amazing shot, amazing release.
I mean, that game where he scored 2 goals in round one, he could have had versus Colorado, he could have had 5 goals that game.
I am absolutely certain Dallas did not want a defensive zone faceoff with 11 seconds left or whatever it is here. 9 seconds.
Wow.
That's good work by Seattle. Get the puck in, get a faceoff.
Yeah, get the puck in. Yeah. Ottinger just gloves it, traps it, holds it. 9.2 seconds. Timeout.
I guess we'll ride this out. Who do you like? Who do you think is going to win the cup?
Carolina is the best team remaining.
That's not the clue. So does that mean they win? You like them beating Florida?
I like them to beat Florida. And I mean, I think I underestimated Vegas. And they're a pretty good team.
Everyone did.
And you know what? When you go through their lineup, pretty deep at center, got some pretty good wingers. Speaking of which, you know, like I think back to that expansion, 2017, I think it was 2017, and some of the pickups, George McPhee at the time, he put together quite a team in Vegas, eh? Listen to this, Eric. 2018, Vegas finals loss. 2019, first round loss. 2020, third round loss. 2021, third round loss. 2022, missed the playoffs. and 2023, they're in the third round.
Dallas is in the third round now.
Yeah. So
there's a shot of Jim Neal right now.
Yeah.
He's one of the best GMs ever.
Very, very good general manager.
Amazing general manager, honestly.
2-1 is the final.
And, such a respectable human being and an excellent, excellent, excellent general manager, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. From the Steve Yzerman school, him too, or them together. You know, from the Ken Holland school.
From the Ken Holland school. You talk about Vegas and the impressive things that have happened there. Like this draft that Dallas had where they got Ottinger and Robertson. I mean, this and Thomas Harley has been fantastic for them. Like this team is really well built. Really yeah. built for the playoffs. The hiring of Pete DeBoer after Bones is a dangerous team. I like them to take down Vegas personally. I think they're going to the Cup final against Carolina.
Nice to see Ali Nesreddine make it to the next round. And you know what? I'm probably going to send them a text message. We'll see if we can get him on the podcast sometime soon. That would be cool. That would be cool. We've had him on before. Ottinger, the best goalie remaining?
He hasn't been so far in these playoffs. You know, hasn't been on the level that we saw from him last year. The fact that it hasn't mattered quite as much and they're going on to the conference finals is something I'd be concerned about if I was Vegas. They've gotten some great goaltending. They were getting it from Brossoit. They're getting it from Aiden Hill, who was really great. And Jonathan Quick sitting on the bench is another option. And anybody who's like, you know, he's done. If he has to get in there at some point, I would not bet against him stealing a game. You know, he's as fiery competitor as you could find. It's a pretty great conference final that's set up here. Like, I know it's not as sexy with the teams that are in there.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, like, Vegas-Dallas is going to be big boy hockey, and Carolina-Florida, considering what Florida has done in these playoffs and the way Carolina plays – that's going to be a war.
Max Domi has a 1-4 chance to win the Stanley Cup.
Max Domi is going to win himself a pretty good contract.
Yeah.
For a guy who's bounced around and been all over the place. And it might be, you know, Max Domi is going to get himself a good contract. And there's a team with about $40 million of the cap space that will probably give it to him and watch him play with Connor Bedard.
Yeah, Max Pacioretty's got the same chance to win a Stanley Cup with the Carolina Hurricanes.
They have to play a game.
Jesperi Kotkaniemi. Kotkaniemi's looking pretty good, eh, in the playoffs.
He's a big game player. It's not a secret. I think everybody in Montreal knew that. No matter how much people wanted to diminish what kind of player Kotkaniemi is, he has shown that he's a big game player. And it took him a long time to get the engine going this year.
Yeah.
That contract that Don Waddell gave him looked like, okay, this could be a good value deal over 8 years. And then it looked like this could be an unmitigated disaster.
Yeah.
And you know, all of a sudden he put up career numbers in the end and the playoffs started and playoff Kotkaniemi showed up and he's been all over it. That line.
Dadonov has a chance at the Cup too, by the way.
Oh my gosh. And he's been, you know, He's a solid player. He's a solid player. He's probably the only player that didn't get much better under Marty St. Louis. It was just miscast here. Like, Marty wanted him to kill penalties. That's something he had never done. He wasn't getting power play time. It's something he's always done. Started off on the fourth line. Not something he's typically done. It just wasn't a fit between the two. And I think Marty would be the first one to say that. Like, it wasn't a fit. And he said himself, he never had an issue with Dadonov's work ethic or the way he, you know, he's a pro.
They didn't work out for Gurianov either.
He's had some big moments in these playoffs. Gurianov, we'll see what the future holds for that player. I don't think it's in Montreal.
No.
Wouldn't be surprised if it's in Russia. but we'll see.
But Dadonov didn't work out in Montreal, and neither did Gurianov. I mean, they have something in common. They're both Russians, and I'm not so sure if that means anything or not. Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, but the Canadians did clear Shea Weber's contract off the books, though, so then.
Yeah,
they're not crying about any of
that. That's right. You got to feel happy for Joe Pavelski, who's going on to the next round. He's being interviewed right now as we speak.
Eight goals in the series for that guy, coming off a unbelievable head injury. Like
one of the best goal scorers in the National Hockey League that a lot of people forget about in the last 7 or 8 years. Like, just one of the best.
Did you watch Steve Shutt play?
Yes, I did. Of course, near the end of his career.
The modern day Steve Shutt.
Steve Shutt, guy was just a shooter, man.
The best, yeah, but he also had the best like hand eye coordination of a generation.
Oh, this guy can deflect pucks. Yeah, the tipping pucks. He was absolutely fantastic. And Joe Pavelski's great at tipping pucks. You're right about that.
Best in the NHL.
Yeah, he's absolutely fantastic at tipping.
Unrivaled. Yeah, no, it's great.
I want to get back to Kotkaniemi for a second. I mean, look, it's obvious. I think now that the play would have been to sign him to match the offer sheet, knowing that it was too much money at 6.1 in year one. But after that, if you can get him signed to a long-term deal at a number inferior to that, I mean, I don't think Carolina is complaining about Jesperi Kotkaniemi's contract the rest of the way. And he's only going to get better. You know,
I don't agree.
You don't agree?
I'm not taking anything away from Jesperi. I just think at the time when the offer was made, I didn't really see a way for Bergevin to get to sign that thing. I mean, it just didn't make sense to me. It clearly didn't make sense to him or any. I mean, they would have had an impossible time justifying it. And the mistake was not getting
him done. Yeah, but everybody knew that.
The mistake was not getting him done before that. That's if you want to point to some mistake and say that, you know, this was in their control and they kind of blew it. You know,
yeah.
I don't know what the hard line was from the agent. It's very easy to play kind of Monday morning quarterback on that whole decision. To me, it was, I remember it at the time, there was no way for the Canadians to sign that deal. Like, there was just no way to do it.
Yeah.
It would have screwed up their entire salary structure.
Yeah, now that I remember, of course, there was no room and all that stuff, but.
Not just room, just setting precedents for certain players and the structure that they need to be under, and Suzuki not done to a deal yet and all that stuff. Like, it would have messed up everything. It was a great play by Carolina. It was a great play because it worked. You know, like, that was smart thinking and smart calculation on their behalf. And it looked like, honestly, it looked almost foolish at the time because it was so aggressive.
Yeah.
That all it looked like was clearly revenge. And Don Waddell saying it had nothing to do with revenge at all. And we loved him. Like, bullshit. We know what it was exactly about, the way it was structured and the way it was created and sold by social media and all that. But to sit here and say that the Canadians in hindsight should have signed it, I mean, it didn't make sense the day of to sign it. And there was no way to
look at it. But everyone, Eric, everybody knew that it didn't make sense to sign the offer sheet because that deal, obviously, it made no sense to anybody. But when I say that, I mean, and this is the difficult part, right? Because we don't have a crystal ball. Had you had a crystal ball and known that you were going to be able to sign Kotkaniemi after that offer sheet to a contract, which was a long term at around $4.8 million, that's pretty respectable. Because in the end, the Canadians have, you know, Christian Dvorak at like $4.45 million or something like that. And I think Dvorak's been disappointing. He's a good player. I mean, he definitely is a good player.
I don't think there's any question he's been disappointing.
But to me, he's he's bred with no gluten. I mean, he's very bland.
Have you tried gluten-free bread? It's not that bad.
Gluten-free everything is usually not that good.
You know what he is? He's like an ice cream sundae, but with the Hershey syrup instead of the hot fudge.
Okay, that's a good way of looking at it. Have you tried gluten-free pizza, by the way? Sure. Have you tried that? Yeah?
Sure, I've tried it.
It's okay? Do I
eat it regularly? Absolutely not. Listen, Christian Dvorak was a really good player in Arizona. Like, I remember being very early on the case of the Canadians being into Christian Dvorak and wanting to sign him, and they saw a player that was a very good player in Arizona. A player that was projecting to do even better with Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't happened. I don't know why. I don't know if maybe just it's the market and it's not for him. And I think it really hasn't helped him in terms of getting the fans on his side. The fact that he's such a, and I don't say this as an insult, he's a boring hockey player. He doesn't have flash to his game.
And no, so he doesn't.
If he's not going to put up that type of production where he's, you know, in between, where he could moonlight as a top six center and end up being, you know, a really, really good third line center, which he hasn't been. He hasn't been for Montreal. There have been way too many nights where he's been invisible. But if he could at least play to his strengths and analytically live up to that kind of reputation, you could live with the fact that he's not flashy and he's boring. But the fact that he's not flashy and he is boring, coupled with what's been a lack of production, a lack of consistency, and too many nights where he's been invisible, it hasn't been a good deal. It hasn't worked out well. And I'm not sure how he's coming back and in what shape he's coming back in. I don't mean physically. I just mean, is he going to deliver a real bounce back here? Because if he could, he would have some real value to the Canadians in terms of stabilizing their center line. I don't trust it's going to happen. That's all.
I hear you. Marinaro, a shout out to VPR Impex, and check them out at vprimpex.com. Ecological cleaning solutions for a safer environment. They help you take advantage of the wonderful benefits of ecological cleaning solutions using vapor technology, which they call Vapore, to clean faster and more efficiently and save money in the process, whether it's for residential or whether it's commercial, hospitals, schools, old age homes, cleaning efficiently without the need for harsh chemicals. At 16641 Hymas in Kirkland, once again, check them out at vprimpex.com. Call my buddy Mario Ruffalo at that point. All right, okay. Mark Bergevin. Last but not least here. I think this is the last one. Mark Bergevin. His name thrown out there. Pierre Lebrun says the Penguins have had interviews for a general manager. They've had Zoom calls. They've gone through the first round. Mark Bergevin, Eric Tulsky, Jason Carmanos, and Peter Chiarelli among those interviewed. Frank Saravalli added Jason Botterill, Ryan Martin, who's the assistant general manager of the New York Rangers, John Chayka, and Mathieu Darche. What do you think?
I think there's going to be a lot of bridesmaids.
Right? What do you think? It's a job.
I don't know. You know, I can't speak to who I think gets the job. I could speak to what kind of person I'd be looking for to take the job.
Okay. Well, you think Mark Bergevin would be a good fit in Pittsburgh? Why or why not?
I think if Pittsburgh is interested in doing a retool, that he could be a very good candidate. I think if Pittsburgh is interested in completely reshaping their roster and rebuilding, which is probably the road that they should go down sooner than later. I don't know that that's his experience as a general manager.
No, you know? Well, because he didn't take that route, obviously, right? He tried to patch the Montreal Canadiens in 2012 when they finished third last in the league to try and make them better right away. He does not have the experience of a rebuild. And if you want to rebuild, Jeff Gordon's got that experience with the Rangers and now with the Canadiens, but Mark Bergevin does not.
I've always felt that Mark is an exceptionally bright hockey mind. He's an exceptionally bright hockey person, and he is a very shrewd talent evaluator and a guy who's bold and emotionally invested. And all the things that you would consider to be his strengths could also be weaknesses at times for him. Nobody's perfect in that domain. Nobody who sits in that chair across the league is perfect. Does he have flaws? Is he an executive like Jeff Gordon or even like Kent Hughes? I don't think so. Do I think he's an exceptional kind of hockey evaluator and a guy who was great at making trades? You know, was he great at making building teams? It would be tough to argue that he was. Was he great at making individual moves and putting together components that could help a team win? Absolutely. You know, and then we're talking about what he was in Montreal and what he might have been in Chicago before that. And you can't discount the value of experiences and how Mark, in the contemplation period between what he did in Montreal and going to LA and seeing how things ran there and potentially joining another team and becoming GM again, you know, we all have those times in our lives where we say, well, I would have done this differently. I would have done this and I would have done that. That's the opportunity that he's had. So
I can't
speak to what kind of candidate he would be in Pittsburgh.
But hold on a second.
Without knowing which direction they want to go in with their franchise. But I do think he could be a very good candidate and not without flaws. Of course, there are flaws.
Now, unless the Pittsburgh ownership group wants to go in a different direction, the direction they chose to go in over the last couple of years by extending Letang and having still Crosby and Malcolm and Letang is that they want to be able to patch the team to be able to go one long run again and try and go for that Stanley Cup, which would be the fourth cup for those gentlemen that I just talked about. If that's the case, Marc Bergevin had an older Carey Price. He had an older Shea Weber, which he had acquired, and an older, you know, Ben Chiarot and Jeff Petrie, Joel Edmondson. That last year in Montreal, when they went to the final, he went all in. He went out, he acquired Merrill. He went out, he acquired Gustafson. He went out, he acquired Eric Staal. I mean, he went all in.
And before he got Anderson and he got Toffoli and he got the components of a team that you looked at and said, I don't know how great this will go in the regular season, but if they make the playoffs, watch out.
Yeah, and you know what? If that's the context, and you would think that it probably is because you just get the feeling that the only way a rebuild makes sense for Pittsburgh is if they would trade Crosby too, and you get the feeling that Crosby was drafted and will retire a Pittsburgh Penguin. At least, I mean, that's the feeling that I get. And if that's the case, Bergevin, in the short term, could probably, I think he has the experience to be able to patch it, to give it a good kick at the can there in Pittsburgh.
Well, I won't disagree with any of that. Yeah. What I would say is that the guys who run Fenway Sports.
Yes. Who are the new owners of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and Mario Lemieux is a minority owner now.
Yeah, they would have an analytic lean. And there are some names that I saw that are more analytically inclined than Mark is, unless something has changed in the last couple of years. It'll be interesting to see who ends up on the short list. The list is quite long right now, and that's what it should be when you're opening up a search for a new general manager. The best guy for the job, I could say unequivocally, would have been Kyle Dubas if he had put his name in the ring. It's clear now that he doesn't want to be in the ring.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where Bradtree Living is going to end up, but that's a really good GM that's on the market that's going to end up somewhere.
Yeah. Kyle Dubas, who earlier today said that, you know, he'll either stay in Toronto, and if he's not staying in Toronto, he'll actually detach and take a sabbatical because, you know, the last year has been very, very taxing on him and his family. And that's something that he wants to, you know, take a step back and evaluate. And so at that point, he's taken, you know, he wouldn't be going to Pittsburgh. But look, if Mario Lemieux was the majority owner, which he's not, I think it would have been Marc Bergevin's job to lose, because everyone knows that Marc Bergevin and Mario Lemieux, childhood friends. Marc Bergevin used to play for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Marc Bergevin and Mario Lemieux played for the Villamart Hurricanes. And, you know, they share also a mutual friend who's best friends with each other, which is super agent Pat Brisson. And Brisson, one of Mario Lemieux's best friends. Marc Bergevin, one of Mario Lemieux's best friends. Marc Bergevin and Pat Brisson, best of friends. So if Mario Lemieux, and you know what, it still could be good enough. Sometimes, you know, that familiarity, obviously, you know, and it helps. If Mario Lemieux's got to say, I would think that of all the names that are there, that Marc Bergevin would be in pole position if Mario Lemieux has a say. I don't know how much of a say he has. Obviously, he does. I don't know how much.
I would think he's got a say. I don't disagree with you. The connections run deep. Whether or not they're influential in the process is a totally different story. I think it helps get an interview. I think Mark's experience alone should be enough for him to be interviewed. We'll see. we'll see what ends up happening. You know, he doesn't have a bad gig in LA and closer to his kids. And there's 12 names in the ring right now. Like, let's see where it gets whittled down to. And if Mark is still standing, then obviously it could be very much a viable candidate for the job. But I think it's going to be a really interesting one. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah. Hey, Mike Zeisberger just brings up something that I'd forgot about for a second. The Pete DeBoer Bowl, right? Vegas fired him. Dallas hired him, he tweets. And he's right. Pete DeBoer is going up against his former team. Yeah.
Yeah. And one of the other ones is still there, too. Unless I'm mistaken. Did he not coach Florida at some point? I'm getting lost on the coaching carousel.
Who's
Pete
that?
DeBoer. Pete DeBoer? Was Pete DeBoer never a coach in Florida? Maybe I just made that up because
Pete late. DeBoer in Florida. No, I don't think so. Pete DeBoer in Florida. No.
No, I'm making that up.
Yeah. No, Pete DeBoer.
I was right.
He coached in Florida. He coached in Florida.
Right. It's nice to know my memory still works.
No, he coached in Florida. It's because it was 15 years ago that we forget, right?
That's, well, you forgot, I didn't.
Yeah, no, good for you. Yeah, you definitely did. He coached Florida, Jersey, San Jose, Vegas, Dallas, quite the coaching career. His record with the Florida Panthers, by the way, missed the playoffs.
Yeah, they weren't a very good team from 2008 to 11.
Then he goes to New Jersey. They lose in the Stanley Cup Finals in his first year there. Then they missed the playoffs. Then he's fired the year after, not even at the midway point of the season. And then with San Jose, he loses in the Stanley Cup Final, loses in the first round, loses in the second round, loses in the conference final. And then he's let go before the midway point of that other season. And then he loses in the conference final with Vegas. And he loses in the conference final again, misses the playoffs, and now he's with Dallas. Man, you'd like to see a guy like that win the Stanley Cup so close, but yet so far.
It's a tough gig.
You'd like to see a guy like that win the Stanley Cup.
It's a tough gig.
Yeah.
Ask Sheldon Keefe.
You're right about that. Hey, I kept you for a long time, and I'm very, very appreciative because, you weren't even to watch Game 7 without one eye on it. But thanks so much, man, and I'll talk to you soon. I really appreciate it.
Pleasure. Take care, Tony.
All right. There you have it. Eric Engels of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. Once again, in case you missed it, the Dallas Stars 2-1 winners over the Seattle Kraken. So Dallas versus Vegas and Carolina versus Florida. Marinero with a shout out to my boy Charlie Cabrera over at the Optimal Stretch Clinic, 4710 St. Ambroise, room 312. Go to door C and room 312. And he specializes in fascial stretch therapy. There aren't too many in the country that can do it, but he saw me here struggling. Top of my back and my shoulder blade was aching me quite a bit. I even had pains in my wrist, and he came in and he did some work on me. And he said, there's not too many in the country that do the type of work that I do. Why don't you come in and take a look for yourself? And I've gone in and I've been a regular ever since. So I really, really thank him. And you check him out if you can. If it's good enough for George St. Pierre, it's good enough for me. And there's a video of George. Check him out at OptimalStretchClinic.com and Optimal Stretch Clinic on Instagram. Paul Maurice is former Carolina coach. Yes, Paul Maurice is former Carolina coach. Tony, how's the car? Did you get a new one? How's the car? Did I get a new one? No, I didn't get a new car just yet. I had one that was accidented. Right now I have a loaner, and we'll see. Only reason Habs are getting the fifth pick is because of injuries. Yeah, okay. Maurice is a great interview. He certainly is. Out of all the coaches in the league, Paul Maurice, great interview. Rod Brind'Amour, great interview. Marty St. Louis, very, very good interview. Yeah. Adam says, Tony, 30 years and still no cup in Canada. Why? Because every American team has won it since. There's a good reason, huh? I was at a big box store today. I went in and the gentleman said to me, c'est qui va gagner la coupe? I said, l'équipe qui va gagner dernier match. He looked at me. He started laughing. Who's going to win the cup? The team that's going to win the last game. Yeah. So don't you find it a little crazy that Vegas enters the National Hockey League as an expansion team in 2017, 2018. Finals lost, first round lost, third round lost, third round lost, missed the playoffs, third round. Isn't that amazing? They're an expansion team. Picking up Riley Smith in the expansion draft from Florida. He picked up Jonathan Marchessault, made a deal for Smith, I believe. Making a deal for Shea Theodore. Making a deal for Braden McNabb. Picking up in expansion as well, William Karlsson. They made some really good moves, man. And credit to Seattle, too, eh? A lot of credit to Seattle. Came into the league a couple of years ago, and look at the run they gave Dallas. Losing Game 7 in Dallas by a score of 2-1. Paul goes, well, we'll get Mitch Garber on the podcast the next week. That would be cool, too. That's it for us, by the way. It is 11 p.m. on the nose. Marinara reminding you that we are brought to you in part by La Bit ATB, embrace your true nature. XL Moto and XLMoto.com. Check out their website, and I'll give you their number. Number one dealers of the Piaggio Group in North America, which are Piaggio scooters, Aprilia, and of course, the very renowned Vespa. 738-6686 is the number to call. And brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group, a leading full-service logistics provider serving all of North America. They are driven to be different. For you, the Sick Army, for you, the Sick community, tell all your friends about the Sick Podcast growing every day. I'm Marinaro. You can watch live on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Like it, share it with your friends. Comment Sick, S-I-C-K, S-I-C-K. And if you listen via Google, Apple, or Spotify, leave us a five-star review. It's our way of feeling the love. You know where Sammy and Aniello are right now? They're back at Master Control. You know who they are? They're Cavallaro. You know who I am? I'm Marinaro. Have a good night. We'll be back tomorrow. Same time, same place. 10 p.m. Eastern. The Sick Podcast.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow The Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group, driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature.